Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the third day of January, 2024. I'm your host, Mark Hall. Let's start off our look at what's going on around the nation and the world today with a quick, well, it's really not news at all, but it is certainly a sign of the times story. From Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden, and the U.S. Treasury, how's that for a misnomer, which says the piece has a morbid habit of revealing big round numbers of debt around major calendar milestones, like the new year, and this one's no different, because according to the latest Treasury Daily Statement published after the close Tuesday, it says, and reflecting the U.S. Treasury's financial statements as of basically year-end, December 29, 2023, total U.S. debt as at the end of last year was, drumroll please, just over 34 trillion bucks. For the first time ever, 34,1,493,000,000, and who knows and who cares how many other assorted little bits of fake dollars after the decimal point there. And when I think of it, that too is interesting. Anybody remember back when $1 billion used to be considered something worth paying attention to? Now it's merely round-off error. And by the way, what does that tell you is coming when it comes to your grocery bills in the coming year? And just about everything else, too. Next, a brief update from Epstein's pedophile island. Were you expecting to see the list of names with Bill Clinton's featured prominently? Well, don't hold your breath. You knew that already, didn't you? Some on social media says one of several stories covering the lack of a list are speculating that the public disclosure of the 150 or more names associated with the deep state's favorite pedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, has been delayed. Turns out that Judge Loretta Preska signed an order on December 18th for the public release of the identities of those more than 150 people mentioned in various court documents in a now-settled 2015 civil lawsuit filed by Virginia Jeffrey that centered on allegations that Epstein's associate and former girlfriend and, I guess you'd say, pimp, Ghislaine Maxwell, facilitated the sexual abuse, hers in particular, and a number of prominent figures, including the rapist former President Bill Clinton and Britain's Prince Andrew, are expected to be named, but probably not today, and no, not on the original schedule or even the delayed schedule. It might be later in July, unless it gets delayed again, and the deadline for objections for the unsealing of the name supposedly passed at midnight on January the 1st. And I guess it seems deadlines really only matter when the deep state's out to get you. From there then on, we go to World War III, where the front may or may not be expanding, claiming that they're bombing Hezbollah terrorists, say multiple stories, including from Reuters as well as Hal Turner's radio show. The Israeli Defense Force has now claimed that it carried out airstrikes in Beirut, Lebanon, scattering body parts, and the photos, if you can handle it, are online, over a wide area. According to information coming out of that region, at least three people are known dead, others injured, and according to sources inside Israel, Saleh al-Aruri, senior Hamas leader, was eliminated, taken out, this time in Beirut, a southern suburb called Dahiyeh. And the stories say it's a Hezbollah stronghold. But it's definitely in Lebanon, and we'll see how it gets spun. Was this an actual escalation, or just another maybe? Here's another one of those stories from the increasingly large gray area. Iranian state media, says a piece from Zero Hedge, has confirmed that more than 70 people were killed in two terrorist attacks, and they're using the word, at the cemetery where memorial anniversary events for slain IRGC General Qasem Soleimani were being held in the southern city of Kerman. Sky News reports that a spokesman for Iran's emergency services told state media that 73 people had been killed and 170 injured on the four-year anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, and Iran is vowing to, quote, punish the perpetrators of the Kerman explosions, according to state media. Meanwhile, related to the Ukraine front of World War III, which pretty much seems all over except for the shouting, more and more Western publications, says Tyler Durden's summary, are belatedly admitting that all is not well when it comes to the state of the war. The Times of London, the latest to report on Sunday, that the UK has, quote, nothing left in its own military stockpiles after being among the biggest weapons suppliers for the nearly 2 years of conflict. And guess whose stockpiles are even more depleted, folks? But it's not like the regime ever intended to use them defending the southern border, now is it? And the admissions just keep on coming. British defense officials and European leaders are now busy cranking up the gears, it says, to ramp up weapons production. Hey, I guess there's still more world war to come. And notably, says Zero Hedge, quoting the Times, the dwindled UK stockpile is being reported at a time that Britain's military intelligence chiefs believe Ukraine, quote, cannot win the war against Russia in 2024 because it does not have the manpower or the weapons for a big battlefield breakthrough, unquote, and duh. Part of the problem is what they call war fatigue, i.e. the citizenry of these various nations are just plain sick and tired of it. And, oh yeah, a Trump victory, which would be likely in the event that they don't kill him or continue to rig the election, will spell the end of efforts to fuel the proxy war on behalf of the Ukrainian dictator with the piano-playing penis. Here's a related story, this time courtesy of Robert Williams via the Gatestone Institute, which says that pro-Hamas protests in London are not as apparently organic and spontaneous as the organizers would like you to believe they are. And he goes through a whole lot of detail with names and connections, but the bottom line is this. At least four groups, it says, with links to Hamas are reportedly behind a number of the marches. The Muslim Association of Britain, MAB, the Palestinian Forum for Britain, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and something called the Friends of Al-Aqsa. And these same groups, says the piece from the Gatestone Institute, were behind the largest protest so far on November the 11th in London, where about 300,000 people were said to have participated. Supporting Hamas, though, a proscribed terrorist organization in the UK, could lead to up to 14 years in prison. And I guess we can see what happens when the rhetoric replaces reality. Because it increasingly looks, folks, like they're treating Hamas kind of like they were Antifa or BLM as opposed to MAGA types. You can almost say it really ain't terror unless the real terrorists say it is. Speaking of which, let's turn to the war on the non-existent southern border, where it's not so much the casualties that tell the tale, but the reporting about them that is really educational. This one comes from the Daily Mail in the UK, and the headline tells us a lot about how this is being received. An Arizona man, it says, is shot at 16 times while driving home from Mexico on Christmas Eve after taking a different route than he intended to avoid a roadblock caused by the migrant crisis, sick, that left him at the mercy of various rival smuggling gangs, which is kind of what they're doing to the entire stinking United States, especially the state of Arizona. The fellow's name was Craig Ricketts, age 68, who passed through a violence-plagued route in Sonora, Mexico, where his car was bullet-riddled. Two bullets hit him in the arm and the leg, one shattering his left ankle. And he excused the attack, saying, quote, "They don't know who I am." In other words, I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He blames his GPS because it has traffic warnings, but it didn't warn him about potential terrorist attacks or migrant invader routes. I guess that's something Garmin will have to work on. But it might be tough to keep up with. Wait a minute, what am I thinking? Who am I kidding? The invaders already have all the information like that that they need. It's just Americans that don't. Normally, says the piece, Ricketts would have headed through the Lukeville port of entry, but if you've been following the news, you know that that's a real mess. So, that checkpoint was closed on December 4th, it says, when U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officers, sick, were reassigned to process illegal invaders. They call them asylum seekers here. Let's just let that one sit there and stink for a second. But the businessman said his target goal was to go through the port at Nogales, but the GPS redirected him instead to a route near the Sasabe port of entry that is now highly contested by rival smuggling gangs, some of whom are probably wearing U.S. uniforms. But hey, that's just my cynicism speaking, because I've been paying attention to the truth here. Remember, folks, the right kind of gangs are being supported by Big Brother. You could even say fast and furiously. Said Ricketts, evidently referring to his offending GPS system, they have a notification if the traffic is slow or there's an accident ahead, but there's nothing that tells you you're going into danger. Suddenly, he found his car peppered with bullets, nearly 20 shots. Two hit the 68-year-old himself. One hit his radio. Lots of others hit his window and door. And as I've already mentioned, he said he feels no animosity towards his attackers because, quote, "the bottom line is they don't know who I am. They just wanted to secure their access for smuggling people," unquote. And isn't that special? By the way, he was down there because for the past 7 years, he's been a real estate developer in a place called Puerto Libertad, in a community known as Liberado, which is billed as Mexico's most exclusive development. That is, if you survive the trip. What do you bet they're going to have better security there than the U.S. border does? Here's another related item, this time courtesy of Zero Hedge again, and Real America's Voice host Ben Berquam, who published a video on social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, that exposes what he called a guerrilla camp on the southern border. I guess one of many folks operated in this case, and I guess that also applies to most of them, by radical leftist groups. Sometimes they're called NGOs, which means non-governmental organization, but it's really a public-private partnership, aiding and abetting the invasion. And in this case, they're aiding and abetting the illegal migrant invasion, specifically by the cartels. And here I have to note that, as you're probably aware, it's hard to know when the cartels end and their communist Chinese partners begin. Okay, he wrote, here is the whole video. You better watch it all. It just gets worse and worse. Leftists caught directly aiding and abetting the invasion of our country at the wall in, oh, this place sounds familiar, Sasabe, Arizona, he wrote. And then it continued, these are some of the same people that we previously exposed harboring illegals at their camp in Aravaca. How do we save our country when we allow enemies within to do this? When we take power back, I guess you'd have to put the word if in there, these organizations must be defunded and prosecuted, unquote. And some of us will suggest it's a bit too late for that. It's going to require a military response at this point, and that probably won't be allowed because the military invasion is already complete, folks. The fifth columns are everywhere. Well, maybe I'd better rephrase that a bit. The 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, and 27th columns, or battalions, are already in place. And just to reprise what you probably already knew, but now the numbers are at least official, Fox News is reporting that Big Brother has admitted 302,000 encounters, isn't that a polite way to put it, with illegal invaders occurring in 1 month, December 2023, and that doesn't count all the special forces and other types that weren't encountered at all, but just came on across and joined up with their cells. Item. And you know what? When I put this story in the stack originally, I thought it was a bit of a shift, but now that I'm doing it, I don't think so. From Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit, a convicted ballot harvester, a traitoress named Gloria Torres, has been appointed vice mayor of San Luis, Arizona, despite having pled guilty in June 2023, to ballot abuse. They say despite. I think the real truth, folks, is probably because. She was caught doing the dirty deed by local figures with video surveillance. The video information was incriminating, and as a result, several people, including a former mayor, were convicted. Among the charges, two Class 6 felonies for conspiracy and ballot abuse. And now I guess it's more and more clear why the criminality continues, and indeed increases. Well, at least you have to admit the term vice mayor is apropos. What do you bet some appointed criminal in Arizona will soon declare who the locals there aren't going to be allowed to vote for? And you know what, folks? I guess you just have to say one way or another, almost all the stories seem to be related. Investigative journalist Julie Kelly appeared on Steve Bannon's show, The War Room, to discuss the likely illegal actions, hey, tell me something we didn't know, taken by the fraudulent and politicized, to understate the case quite a bit, January 6th Select Committee in the U.S. House of Reprobates. That Select Committee says the piece destroyed a number of testimonies, including the key testimony and video of the top Secret Service official, Robert Engel, from the Trump administration. What an amazing coincidence. And this one you've got to pay some attention to. Bannon argues that the video would almost certainly have exonerated President Trump, but now it can't be found because the crooks there deleted it. Said Julie Kelly, Jack Smith's 45-page indictment against the elected president, Donald Trump, on four counts for January 6th is basically lifted right straight from the January 6th Select Committee report. You could go through it, she said, and I think I did that as soon as the indictment was filed. You could compare that to what we heard in the J6 hearings and also their final report issued December 2022. Jack Smith hadn't done any heavy lifting, she said. He's simply cribbing all of the work from the J6 Select Committee together, which means it's even more important, as if we expected this to actually happen, that Mike Johnson and the Rhinos start their own January 6th Select Committee to investigate the other fake one. Because she said the predicate for the criminal indictments, plural, for the Colorado Supreme Court, for the Maine scumbag and others, is all based on the work of that so-called committee. And therefore, she said, it's crucial that House Republicans, and I gotta say it, folks, sick, expose the malfeasance of that committee, which is now centered on the destruction or concealment of evidence, not just from the public, now from the defendant in Jack Smith's January 6th indictment. It's been going on for months, she said. Bannon added then that the number one thing people need to be aware of is the destruction of evidence. Remember, there were over 1,100 recorded depositions, but only about 200 have at even any one time been made available. So that means 800 or 900 haven't been seen. And Bobby Engel, one of those that hasn't been seen, wasn't just some security guy. He was head of the Secret Service for Donald Trump. More and more pundits then are asking, will 2024 finally be the year when the rhinos in Congress do what they should have never allowed to have happened in the first place and impeach the senile, diaper-wearing mob boss whose puppet masters clearly stole the 2020 election and have been working real hard to do it all over again and slam it down people's throats even more brazenly this time around? Don't hold your breath, but ponder yet another sign of the times. This is kind of an interesting one. Christina Layla, writing for the Gateway Pundit, notes that GOP sick Representative Bill Johnson of Ohio on Tuesday announced he will be resigning from Congress.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
This after the resignation by the former Speaker for the Traitors, Kevin McCarthy of California, took effect on Sunday. And this, of course, follows the ousting from the House of Representatives of Republican GOP Representative George Santos last month, with the aid of 105 rhinos who joined with the outright communists. And ponder the irony. Adam Schiff for Brains lies openly on the House floor, gets away with it, gets rewarded for it. Eric Swalwell makes the bang-bang with Fang Fang and gives who knows what to the communist Chinese who are pulling his strings and other body parts. And the House staff arguably has more communist Chinese on the payroll than they even do Pakistani secret police. They don't get expelled for outright treason, but Santos was ousted, says TGP, after the Biden Department of Just Us, and that certainly rings true, indicted and arrested him on 13 charges of, I hope you're sitting down, wire fraud, money laundering, theft of public funds, and making, say it with me folks, materially false statements. Shame on you, George. You didn't give your cut to the big guy, or you'd have been fine. Notes Christina Layla, after doing nothing this entire Congress, the Republicans, such as they are, the rhinos mostly, are now down to a razor-thin majority.
Another one bites the dust, and another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, hey, hey, gonna get you too, another one bites the dust.
As you probably know by now, folks, I think it's enlightening and even entertaining to take a look at the leftists that are out there with at least a modicum of integrity and see how they are reacting to the increasing revelations that, yeah, they've been lying to us for a lot longer than most Americans have even begun to yet figure out. And when they figure out that they really do want you dead, too, the wheels start to come off that wagon. Well, there are an increasing number of real journalists and authors on that list, but one that I find particularly encouraging is renowned constitutional scholar and Harvard Law Professor Emeritus Jonathan Turley, who has nailed it again with a piece entitled Destroying Democracy to Save It. Maine has shown us exactly what the truth is. Pointing to the scumbag from Maine, Shenno Bellows, who he notes has long embraced extreme political and historic viewpoints and recently denounced the Electoral College as a, quote, relic of white supremacy, Turley took her to task for transparent idiocy. And that's a paraphrase, folks. He begins the column, "You had me at hello." The line from the movie Jerry Maguire came to mind, he said this week, after yet another Democratic Secretary of State, who evidently wasn't even elected herself, folks, just appointed, moved to prevent citizens from voting for former President Donald Trump. And he said she issued a decision, he puts it in quotes, declaring Trump an insurrectionist and therefore ineligible, so she says, to be president. Joining an ignoble list, notes Turley, of Democratic officials in states such as Colorado who claim to safeguard democracy by denying its exercise to millions of Americans. Still in all, he says, the most striking aspect of this poorly crafted decision was not its litany of conclusory findings, but rather, says Professor Turley, Bellows' implausible suggestion that she struggled over the decision. Bellows was a natural choice for the challengers who've been searching for any officials or courts willing to embrace this dangerous theory under the 14th Amendment that they can unilaterally bar candidates that they deem to be rebellious or insurrectionist. Yep, he says, challengers knew they had Bellows at hello. She was one of the first officials, sick, to declare January 6th to be an insurrection prompted by Trump's speech, in spite of the evidence that they don't want you to hear anyway. And previously, he says she had declared that, quote, the January 6th insurrection was an unlawful attempt to overthrow the results of a free and fair election. The insurrectionists failed. Ut democracy prevailed, unquote. And a year after the riot, Bellows was still denouncing the so-called violent insurrection. Of course, says Jonathan Turley, in that 1996 movie, Jerry Maguire, played by Tom Cruise, reminded Dorothy that, quote, we live in a cynical world, a cynical, cynical world. But you, he added, complete me. And in our own cynical politics, he continues, Bellows and Colorado Secretary of State, and I got to put one word in here, folks, the evil Jenna Griswold, among others, he says, have become wildly popular for seeking to complete the effort to defeat Trump by removing him from the ballot. And this cynicism, he says, is captured in statements from pundits who warn that Democrats could no longer rely on the election process, given Trump's soaring popularity. Obviously, folks, democracy is only an excuse for good government when it fits the leftist narrative. One of them, he says, wrote, quote, Democrats may have to act radically to deny Donald Trump the 2024 Republican nomination. We can't rely on Republicans to do it. Trump must be defeated no matter what it takes. Unquote. And that looks like his emphasis there that's added. Even so, says Turley, there are a few Democrat jurists and officials who've refused to participate in this cynical effort to win the election through the courts, or worse. And the problem is, the Democrats know they only need to get Trump off the ballot in a few states to make him constitutionally incapable of becoming president because of that electoral college that they claim to hate so much. So, Trump could be the overwhelming choice of the voters, but still be effectively barred from assuming office. That is, if they don't just come right out and kill him. And let's be honest, folks, can any real observer actually doubt at this point that that's exactly what by any means necessary boils down to? And to achieve this end, he continues, advocates are willing to adopt the style of ballot cleansing powers long associated with authoritarian regimes in countries like Iran, which is why this theory of disqualification remains one of the most dangerous yet to arise in our nation's history. Now, this next paragraph I am going to read verbatim, even though I would have hoped that a constitutional scholar like Jonathan Turley would actually know what form of government we were supposed to have. Quote, the ballot cleansing effort, he said, is only the latest example of what Justice Louis Brandeis identified as the true threat to our, democracy. Not the threat from other countries, but from within. And here he quotes, the greatest dangers to liberty lurk in insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-meaning, but without understanding, unquote. And here I part with that, too, because there's nothing well-meaning in the attempt to destroy everything that most Americans fought and died for over two centuries at this point. Still, says Turley, some of these advocates exhibit precisely that zealotry of someone who seems to understand little beyond the next election, as opposed to the next generation, unquote. So, Jonathan Turley says again, yep, not for the first time, that the Supreme Court should not only act with finality, but with unanimity in rejecting this pernicious disqualification theory. But these same advocates, he adds, are likely to seek to delay or avoid such review. Gee, there's a shocker for you. Even, he notes, on the Colorado Supreme Court, composed entirely of Democrat-appointed justices, advocates could only eke out a 4-3 ruling with a vehement dissent rejecting the bogus theory. So he says there's a real chance that one or more of the liberal justices would show that same fealty to the Constitution in rejecting the theory, which would undermine the claims of figures like Joe Scarborough that arguments against barring Trump are laughable and should be mocked. And even if the court doesn't rule on the Colorado decision, Colorado may seek to moot the appeal since the ballot will remain unchanged anyway with Trump's name on it. And, of course, he notes, some justices may prefer this cup to pass from their lips because the divisive opinion in Bush v. Gore from 2000 still reverberates to this very day. And he adds, for an intense institutionalist, that's a polite way to put it, like Chief Justice John Roberts, who, your host notes, has been referred to as the eminently blackmailable, too. Could his name end up being on Epstein's list? Maybe that's part of the reason for the delay. Well, there's a tendency to take exit ramps and avoid rulings if these conflicts can be resolved in the lower courts. Kick it back on down and pray it doesn't come back up here and upset our lunch plans. Well, concludes Professor Turley, the court now faces the call of history. After the decision from Maine, the justices had better realize that neither they nor the country can avoid this moment. Indeed, the court, he says, was designed for this moment to stand between rage and reason, between cynicism and constitutionalism. And proponents knew exactly whom to call upon, he concludes, for the right answer. Yet, to their credit, other Democrats from California to Maine didn't say hello, but instead, hell no to this proposal. And now, it's time for the Supreme Court to do the same. Well, folks, I think for the most part, Professor Turley is actually right on target, but I can't help but recognize that if that were to actually happen, I would admittedly be surprised. But one way or the other, I guess we'll see. That too will speak volumes. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.